June 6th, 2017, and this is Inside Out, the Naked Truth, coming to you live from the Santa Cruz Mountains of California, broadcasting from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional,
but the truth is always naked.
I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you once again to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition with all its eccentricities and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and the many voices of Errol Strider.
Hi, this is one of the voices here, Barney. I'm going to be, I got something important to say, you know, about you all, what's going on. Oh, delighted, Barney. We're not always on the program at the same time. Well, this is a senator, and we'll see how we get to it, get around to it. Thank you, guys. Looking forward to hear what you have to say. You always have something interesting to say. Our program is sponsored by Go Raw Natural Food, found in Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. Go to goraw.com to find out where Go Raw can be found in your neighborhood. Well, folks, this week's phrase of the week is easy for you to say.
Easy for you to say.
I know. That's easy for me to say. But go ahead, try it. You may find that it's easy for you to say it, too. Then there's all the other things that are said. Right now, if you think about it, there are billions of conversations taking place all over the planet. People putting forth their views about what's best, how we should be, what's wrong or right with life. Typically, it's easy to say those things, especially giving advice. But as we know, not so easy to do. One reason why we love doing our program is that, well, it's easy to say things, like now. But that being said, we like to go a little deeper and find out how we get from saying the good things to acting out on them. Not so easy. On the other hand, before you get too cocky with all the easy saying, here's easy for you to say in Russian. Тебе яко говорит. Go on, try it. Not so easy to say. Oh, yeah? Тебе яко говорит? Or, if that's not so easy, okay, but this is a lot easier in Italian. E presto detto. Try it.
A presto detto.
See? It's easy. But tonight, we're going to explore from how do we get from easy to say, and if not all the way up to easy to do, at least to doable.
And for me, easy to say, it's always easy to say something, but putting action to one's words takes conviction. Do my words have conviction? Am I aligned with what I say? Or do I just speak whatever drops into my mind, like some politicians? Regardless of its import, it may be easy to say yada, yada, or blah, 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 but I want to believe my yada or my blah because I want to take responsibility for what I say what I mean, and act on my meaning. You heard it here.
Now, was that easy for you to say? This is more of a question.
It was. I had to think about it, and I had to make sure that it was really what I wanted to say. So once it was what I wanted to say, it was easy to say.
Uh-huh. So easy. It reminds me of a concept presented to us by the none other than Yeshua ben Joseph, noted figure of history that has captivated a lot of people with his life teachings and sayings. But this was his sentence. He said, "My yoke is easy. The burden of truth is light." Interesting. It's not a metaphor that is necessarily very timely, except in the sense that we are yoked to this capitalistic system that is not serving a lot of people.
My yoke is easy, but
the burden of truth is light.
But was the yoke easy?
It was not only easy, it was funny. Funny yoke.
I believe it was a funny yoke. Oh,
that's terrible.
I can't believe it. We're starting our night like this.
That was
easy for you to say.
Yeah, that was a terrible yoke. Yeah, a terrible yoke.
Very easy for you to say.
I haven't heard from that guy in a while. Yeah, it's easy to say some of these things. But as we point out, not so always easy to do. But say, I heard something today that I thought was very interesting. It was kind of a history of development of society, and it was talking about the period when there were hunters and gatherers, 1983 through 1985. No, it was actually back before then. And they were pretty egalitarian societies, according to this research. And that meant the women and men were kind of equal, so, you know, sort of, until they got to the place where they had storage. In other words, they were nomadic. They didn't have a place of storage. They didn't have a footlocker. They didn't have a place you paid $110 a month to rent up a square so that you can keep your stuff. No, they were peripatetic.
They didn't have stuff.
No, and if you want to know what peripatetic means, it means being able to move because you don't have storage. Or something like that. Not really.
It's for you to say.
Well, it's peripatetic is like you're going all over the place. You're here, you're there, you're everywhere, and you're kind of moving around. You're never in one place. So it kind of does apply.
Some people's minds are just like that.
Mine is like that.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's peripatetic. And sometimes it'll just take off on its own and go down a trail of a combination of words that, you know, beats me, you know. And evidently it's easy to say them because my mouth opens and they come out. What about you, Professor? You obviously had something to say. Oh, well, that's easy for you to say that I have something to say. But whether or not I actually have something to say, well, that's quite more difficult. One thing I would like to point out to you there is that we do say things. Our mouth works rather easily in terms of putting out the words, and it generally works pretty easy in terms of taking in the food. And so you've got the going out with the mouth, saying things that are fairly easy to say, and then you've got the coming in things, which are fairly scrumptious and easy to read. Now, the difficult things are, in terms of what you have to say, and this isn't easy for me to say, the difficult things are...
That's not easy for you to say.
No, it's never easy for me to say that. I'll try it one more time. I'm so sorry, but that's just not easy for me. But it has something to do with being conscious in your saying. So even though it isn't all the way up to doing, it generally, as people say, it's... I'm sorry, that's just not easy for me to say either. But I think what people say is that it's better to be said if it's real and true than if it isn't. So let that be a guideline for all the saying that's going on.
Real and true. It's easy for you to say that.
Well, yes, quite easy, quite easy.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Not as tricky as, you know, but I'll work on that next time, I hope. Maybe I can try that Russian word.
Wasn't there one that says tripping lightly off your tongue or something like that? There's a saying that goes... tripping lightly off your tongue or something.
Yeah, it's like tripping in the tulips.
No, no, no. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
No, no. It's really not the same.
Okay.
Even though it's easy for me to say that it's not the same, it's true that it's not the same.
Well, while we're thinking of something easy to say, one thing we can do, if it's not easy to say and we're coming into hard times, by golly, we can at least sing through the hard times.
Sometimes our living gets so dark and lonesome, it seems like there's nothing we can do. So we reach out to each other, raise a song together, let our voices carry us through.
are singing through the hard times, singing through the hard times, working for the good times to come. We are singing through the hard times, singing through the hard times, working for the good times to come.
And when the war clouds gather, it's so easy to get angry, and just as hard not to be afraid. But you know in your own heart, no matter what happens, you just can't turn your back and walk away.
We are singing through the hard times, singing through the hard times, working for the good times to come. We are singing through the hard times, singing through the hard times, working for the good times to come.
So hand in hand together, we help each other carry the light of peace within us every day. Won't be so far away.
We are singing through the hard times, singing through the hard times, working for the good times to come. We are singing through the hard times, singing through the hard times, working for the good times to come.
And that is Maggie with Dan Schatz. That was easy for them to sing, and I appreciate them singing us through the hard times. Hey, I want to share something with you all that I find kind of really fun. Michelle and I are going to read back through some of the titles. As you know, every week we do a phrase, and we've done over 100 phrases, so we're just going to read a few, kind of like a conversation.
Apparently.
Can't argue with that.
Don't get me started.
Wait a minute.
Enough said.
Oh boy.
Get out of here.
Oh Jesus.
God only knows.
Unbelievable.
Oh, here we go again.
What else?
I beg your pardon.
What did you expect?
I should have known.
Who knew?
I hear you.
Why?
I love.
You think?
I should have known.
Well, yes and no.
Oh, I'll buy that.
You mean it?
It depends.
You sure?
It's always something.
You're something else.
Let's face it.
In other words?
We no bones about it.
Just goes to show you.
No problem.
Let me think about it.
Nothing to it.
Not too fast.
Time to talk.
What a relief.
Really?
Truth be told.
Simply put?
That's more like it.
Well, that makes sense.
That's funny.
That's a good one.
Well, that's a beginning.
That's beside the point.
So to speak.
That's not the half of it.
Seriously?
It's unbelievable.
Simply put.
What do I know?
What else?
What's the catch?
I got it.
That makes sense.
Goodness gracious.
On the other hand...
God only knows.
Seriously?
Go on.
Just kidding.
Is that a fact?
Well, let me think about it.
Just goes to show you.
Essentially, oh, get out of here.
Now you're talking.
Goodness gracious.
On the other hand...
I beg your pardon?
That's a beginning. Those are some of the phrases that we've done, and it's been great fun exploring these phrases, seeing what we come up with, the things that are hard to say. So let's set the stage.
Thank you.
It's not so easy to say things that I feel might hurt you.
It's not so easy for me to say things that I think might hurt you.
It's not easy for me to say things if I'm afraid that I'm going to get some violent retribution.
Well, it's not easy for me to say things if I think that people are going to judge me for saying them.
It's not so easy for me to say how I feel when someone walks into my space and takes it over.
It's not easy to speak my truth, which is to say what I want to say, when I really feel that it's not going to do a bit of good whatsoever and it will alienate someone from me.
Oh, well, that's easy to say.
Today I had breakfast with a friend and we were talking and she spoke to me about how difficult it is for her not to give advice when somebody starts speaking about things. And when the advice is not wanted, it creates a tension and a lot of other stuff. And I realized that that's something we have to learn, you know, like unless advice is asked for, we really don't need to give it, because I know that we have, the two of us have children about the same age, born in the same, within a little bit of each other, who are very much alike. And I don't give advice to my child because of that, because I feel that it's not asked for. What's asked for is to listen, just listen.
And agree.
And agree with whatever that child needs to hear.
Yeah.
Because what they need to hear is what they can grow on. So it's very interesting that it comes down to being able to receive first so you know what to give. And if we receive, genuinely receive someone, we know that they don't want to hear what we have to say. They just want to say what they have to say and get it off their chest or off their brain or wherever they're going to get it from. And our job is to say, I hear you. And absolutely, you're perfectly fine for feeling the way you feel or having the thoughts you have. What is the word? Affirming them.
Hmm. Well, that's easy for you to say.
It is easy for me to say. It's harder to act on. And I can, because I know how important it is.
Having children that you love who are adults and don't want to hear what you have to say makes it easier for you not to say the things that you know they don't want to hear you say.
That's exactly right, and it's easy to say.
Well, it wasn't so easy to say. It actually,
for you?
No.
It wasn't easy for you to say?
Well, no, because I had to wander around my mind.
Well, that's difficult, because there's a lot to wander.
Several different places. Oh, if I think around your mind, good evening, this is Professor Schnitzer. Well, the mind is many currents and crazy kind of cross currents on synapses and tentacles that are reaching out, helping the saying go on. You see, if it runs to the mind, it's so busy making electrical connections that allow these words to come out. And so just take the time to remember that the saying originates in the synapses. And so I recommend that people become more friendly with their synapses. Yeah, a lot of people put their synapses down, and it's never good to put a synapses down, and especially if it's a synapse and not a synopsis, because if you have a synopsis, then you have the general idea of what the whole thing is about.
It's remarkable how easy it is for you to say that.
But that's not the same as the synapse, because the synapse is the one that's carrying a word, and they have special word-carrying synapses. So when you say things, only these synapses go to work, and they have the word-carrying synapse union. And they had a strike recently because they didn't like the words they were being asked to put together, and some of the words they had to say them over and over, and they said they wanted to say that their conscious partner, can't you say something a little more different and have to say the same thing all the time? And it said to me, it said the same thing all the time. I said, yeah. And then it said, ah, but that's not easy for you to say. And I said, no, you try it, because we are here saying it all together. and it did, but it didn't say it very well, but it got the accent right. It was like, something like that. It was almost as silly as what I just got through saying.
Well, that's remarkable, once again, that you, how easy that was for you to say. I couldn't have said that at all.
Works for me. In other words,
what silly people we have on this show.
We are, but in case I don't get a chance to talk to you, I always like to make sure I cover the things that I think are most important. As I continue to make myself aware of the trends of culture and society, and I balance that with, like, what at any moment is going on. And the other day, as I was walking and meditating, I was reminded that while we may look out at a group phenomenon like the Democrats or the Russians or women or kids or whatever, then there's life experience. But the experience of life is actually only experienced by us as individuals. We may be a part, as someone looking from the outside might perceive, of some group, like at some point we're traffic, another point we're travelers, another point we're students. But the experience of life is only ever experienced by each of us in our own self-awareness. So as I look at some of the collective phenomena that are being presented to me, and I ask the question, is there anything to do about it, all this misguided attempts of so much of humanity to make the best of a bad situation in often not very effective ways? Or do I just be here and allow the presence to move with me, through me, and as me?
Was that easy to say?
I'm thinking. Well, that was the other thing I got. I got a question. Is the presence a safe place to be?
Well, it may not be safe, but it's the only place to be.
You'd think.
I know.
So there we have it. We have this presence that we superimpose memories and images from the past as a way of guiding ourselves or navigating ourselves through what is normally all that is going on there.
Do you think it's possible to be in the present, truly be in the present, and not have all those things from the past guide you anywhere?
Hi, this is Bonnie. I would like to jump in here, if I may. I have something to say about this, and that is, when you allow yourself to notice, you see, all these things are going to kind of hit your mind, and it's like an assault on your consciousness, and they're coming from every direction, and a big truckload of them just came in from the past, and then they got another cousins that are like from the past that you don't like and the possible future, and they're all vying for your attention to take control of your point of view. But if we could remember that our point of view at best is a tiny point of view, and it will be changing. So as we move in along, we find ourselves saying things from different points of view if we're in the present, because each present will bring to it its own unique phenomena. And in fact, having like an innocent orientation to the present, like a little baby, like our two-year-old there, your granddaughter there, just makes of the present whatever is fascinating and interesting. Oh, this is Father O'Malley there. Now, wouldn't you say that you have to balance that, of course, there? Balance it? Oh, yeah, you have to balance it with having a sense of the direction of things and intention, and you want to organize and to keep things together. So it's always a balancing act between what the group is doing that you talked about there and what you're doing as the individual, and it's a back-and-forth thing. Rochelle was right. It's the receiving. That's the key to it. Oh, yeah. I agree with you. I think the receiving. But I'll tell you about the receiving. It's easy for you to say. Father O'Malley.
You know what I'm always aware of? I mean, when I'm talking to somebody, sometimes I say things that really are from the past, from a perception of a code of behavior. And I have to stop in that moment and really question, do I truly believe that in this moment, in this time that I'm in, do I truly believe what I just said? And I'm finding that lots of times I don't, that there's things that my mother would have said or somebody would have said that I think is a nice thing to say or an interesting thing to say, but what do I have to say about it? And I've been doing that a lot in the last few weeks, and I'm finding that by dropping into the present and allowing my mind to glean a truth purely from my observation in that moment, what comes out of my mouth is refreshing and flavorful.
It's lime flavored. I can taste it when it comes out of her mouth. These thoughts, she's like, they just have a lime flavor to them. But I think it's important when things are going on to keep in mind that nothing really, not only is it hard for us to say, but nothing really as it seems.
Tell us stories of our wildest dreams that leave us empty in despair, but on our own. So everything is as it seems now. With the dark comes a harsher light, and you can't shake the shadow above that's following you up into the smile and say to them, don't worry, carry on just for a while. You'll get lost and hurry. Can you see now that nothing's as it seems somehow? And everything you've ever lost must have a reason. Comes a harsher light, and you can't shake the shadow above that's following you well into the night. Paint your face on with a smile and say to them, don't worry, carry on just for a while. You'll get lost and hurry. Can you see now that nothing's as it seems?
As It Seems by Gordy, G-O-R-D-I. That's a good thing to remember, because it really is easy to get sucked into appearances and then find out, lo and behold, later on that your appearance, your assumptions about that appearance were not right. So questioning assumptions is a good thing to do.
easy for you to say.
That's right.
I knew that. The thing is, not assuming anything is even more difficult, and yet brings you greater results.
But the advantage of bumping into the mistakes that we've made is that they're always an opportunity to become more expanded.
The mistakes?
Yeah, because if we pay attention to them and learn from them, then we're better able to solve those kinds of problems because we've made the mistakes, and then we can go on. It's like in school. I don't know if they do this, but they just, every time someone makes a mistake, they should go, "Wow, that was a mistake. Johnny made a mistake. Let's give him a hand, hey? Wow, mistakes. So let's see what we can learn from that."
Yeah, I know. We create this that we all have to be perfect in some strange way. You know, that we should perform at our best all the time. And there's no way to learn when you do that. There's nothing to learn when you do that. I mean, the minute you fall down, you're aware of what made you fall, or you should be aware of what made you fall, or somebody can help you with what made you fall so that you don't fall again. But if you never fall, I mean, I don't know. It seems like a pretty dull life.
So let there be the falling.
Right? Let there be the falling and the getting up,
and,
you know.
And the rising. I was listening to Morris Berman today, and he's an author, and he's written quite a few books looking at our life and where we're headed. And he's come to the conclusion that several people, including myself, have come to, that our chance to kind of save the American story, at least as it has been known, is fading rapidly, and we're developing a new story. And so what occurs to me is that new story needs to be based upon different assumptions, a different points of view, different frame of reference. And as I've been listening to all these different speakers, most all of them I would put in the secular humanist / atheist agnostic category, the ones I've been reading. And of course, over the years, I've absorbed the more spiritual religious side. And I've been asking myself, where can they meet? Where can the thoughtful, objective, but open-minded, science-oriented person, how can they best meet the thoughtful, open-minded, spiritual person and see if there's some kind of cross frame of reference that they can both jump over to and discover each other and themselves anew?
Easy to say. When you use the word spiritual, I'm so aware that it means so many different things to so many different people. The word spiritual, for me, when I think of myself as having a being in a spiritual frame of mind, it's as if my mind is not calculating what it has to say. But a spiritual mind for me is the mind that allows the higher mind to take over, so that I'm not sitting and planning what it is that I have to say, but I'm allowing myself to hear what it is I have to say and mouthing it.
Well, that's not as easy for you to say as I would have expected.
I like that. Well, you know, there's, it's like, to me, spirituality is the loss of definition.
To that point, and that's easy for you to say. I can just feel the way those words just slipped through your tongue trippingly.
It did trippingly, but it always righted itself.
It does, before it kind of smacks its head on the ground. So spirit, what I am sensing about what this thing that we put this word on, and we call it spirit, it is recognizing this kind of universal constant, like the present, like that is the ever-abiding source of life, that which is kind of, I love Paul Tillich, a theologian, call it the ground of being. And also, it's the point of view of the whole of it, of all of it. There's our individual self, and then there's the self that is the collection of all selves. And it has something to say, and it's not easy for it to say it a lot of the times because it's not given enough voices in the world to say it, and it really only speaks in a way that you can hear it through other voices, which is why we keep saying the things that challenge us to say them, i.e., there is a source of evolution that is very friendly and nice.
Right. Easy for you to say.
Good evening. This is Rabbi Greenberg. And the source, I love when you talk about the source. I put source on all my word combinations. The source comes here, and I have a spicy sauce on different words when they come out of my mouth. And I think, oh, it's too plain. It's not salty enough. So I add a little salt to what I'm saying. And then people can taste it a little better. So someone comes up to me and they say, Rabbi, what do you mean? You put a little salt, you put a little sweet on your words. And I said, it's the inflection that I put on it, like that last inflection. I had to go to school to learn that inflection there that goes up and boom, coming up. It makes the words come out different, like if I had a different inflection. How would you inflect it, Professor Umbridge? Well, we rather inflected rather like this, actually. And Philip was asking a question. We'd like to inflect it in a way where we say something like, how is it going anyway?
Easy for you to say.
It has been an inflection pattern on my father. See what I mean? See, everybody's got their own inflection. So that's what makes it easy and not so easy to say, because you always have the inflection. That's why it's important to remember when you read things that people are supposed to have said. Like you're talking about Yeshua. He says, my yoke is easy. The burden of truth is light. Oh, Father, this is Father. Yeah, my yoke is easy and the burden of truth is light. Well, if I could try it on myself here, my yoke is easy. Huh. The burden of truth is light. Yeah, it's actually not easy to say, but it's good to practice. Thanks, guys.
It may be very easy to say, it's not always easy to realize.
But here's who I want to talk to. If you like peeking your head out of the cultural mindset, and if you're asking yourself, you know, is there something else? And you're willing to step into the unknown, because if there is a phenomenon that is spirit or presence, it's going to be not just in the known, which is what you're aware of, but it's going to be as much in the unknown. And so at a certain point, you have to kind of just step out in the unknown. And that's why the infinite just has a bunch of unknownness that it just will throw your way as fast as you can move out to engage it.
I think the spirit is always in the unknown.
Well,
because in the known is filled with all those assumptions. The known is filled with the past. The known is filled with the thoughts of the future. The known is because it's known. But you can't do any of those things with the unknown because it's unknown.
That reminds me of something that Morris Berman said in his talk. He reached a point where, and he said this to somebody else. Now, you have to understand, these are coming from the scientific point of view. These are academic people. They're atheists, agnostics, blah, blah, blah. But he stopped and he said to a colleague, he says, you know, is it possible that this whole mechanistic paradigm of science and blah, 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 isn't really real at all, or his own doesn't really get to it? And there was this stunned silence on the part of his colleague, like, I beg your pardon?
It's easy to say that, you know, because the truth of the matter, from my way of looking at it, is that it's constant. It's so much bigger than we have any idea of, that as we move into this space of discovery and begin to see little pieces fitting together that we've never seen coming together before, it's like, it's so exciting. And when you say that, you know, like everything we've discovered so far is as far as we've gone, that the next step is to go into where we've never been. What's that wonderful way Star that Trek. They use Star Trek, you know, to go where no man has gone before?
Or woman. Yeah.
Did they ever put that in?
I don't know. But
it's so perfect. It's so perfect. It's funny, when I hear them say, where no man has gone before, I never think of it as a gender. I think of it as a generic human thing. And I guess because maybe I feel very comfortable as a female.
Let me ask the listener, are you a generic human? I mean, really.
I meant gender.
Gender. Are you a generic gender, or are you one of those high-priced labeled genders, the one that you pay extra for the label that you're wearing? Now, something to think about. Okay, very important to think about that.
Easy for you to say.
Well, okay. All right. While you're thinking about it, sometimes it's not easy to say things when, like, you're scared. Fear can really, you know, get you to bite your tongue. So what we recommend sometimes, if you can't say it, whistle.
Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid. While shivering in my shoes, I strike a careless pose and whistle a happy tune, and no one ever knows I'm afraid. The result of this deception is very strange to tell, for when I fool the people I fear, I fool myself as well. I whistle a happy tune, and every single time, the happiness in the tune convinces me that I'm not afraid. Make believe you're brave, and the trick will take you far. You may be as brave as you make believe you are.
That's a very good idea, Mother. A very good idea.
Yes, it is a good idea, isn't it?
I don't think I shall ever be afraid again.
Good. The result of this deception is very strange to tell. For when I fool the people I fear, I fool myself as well. I whistle a happy tune, and every single time, the happiness in the tune convinces me that I'm not afraid. Make believe you're brave,
and the trick will take you far.
You may be as brave
as you make believe you are.
You may be as brave as you make believe you are.
Thank you, Julia Andrews.
Oh, was that Julia Andrews? Oh.
She did just a recording version of The King and I with Ben, speaking of King, Kingsley.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, I remember Ben Kingsley. I met him once at a showing of some show, movie he started, and it was opening night. And I met the chap, and he was very distinguished in his own kind of natural way. And when he would say things as we were talking, and often I wanted to say to him, as he described his job and everything in his worldview, that's easy for you to say, but I didn't say it because I didn't want to insult him at the time and minimize his sayings. By saying this because they're easy, they're not necessarily as valuable as something that was hard to say. And as I tried to say earlier tonight, not everything's, never mind. Thank you, Professor. That's good. It's always good to hear your contribution.
I agree.
You do agree.
I agree with what he had to say.
Oh, that's good. That's easy. Let me see. Yeah, that's easy for you to say.
It was. It was very easy for me to say that, especially when I agree with something. It's easy to say.
Here's the other question that's been coming up for me as I've been pondering our collective situation and my personal relationship to it. Is there a place, a common focus or intention to which we can agree to and commit to? Because it seems to me that the best choice right now is to come together in groupings and support each other in developing and coming to our highest sense of who we are and helping each other act and participate in the world from that best sense of who we are. And whatever else that best sense is, it includes being congruent, and it includes being congruent as I move in the wave pattern of the universe that's been set up by spirit. And as I sensitize myself to that wave pattern, there was a wave.
Got it. I got that.
And participate in that wave, and it has its high points and its low points and its ups and its downs. In other words, the wave of the universe that has been decreed by Source is a wave phenomenon. And the up and the down, and the in and the out, and the respiration and the expiration.
It's really easy to say that, but it's very, it's out of the can of most people, I think. I think what you just said is extraordinarily esoteric.
Wait a minute.
Esoteric. I mean, there's nothing wrong with esotericism, because eventually those who are not thinking those things catch up. The thing is that because if it's truly real in terms of a view of the universe, eventually we'll all see it. Eventually we will all see it. I think our immaturity keeps us from seeing what you said or feeling what you talked about. You getting into that wave to experience the way we should be or the way we are capable of being or the way we will be. I realized today, I said this to somebody. I said, you know, we know we are not mature as long as there's war. I mean, we will be mature when there is no more war. I mean, there's no more war. We will be mature because it's an immature expression to want to kill another person. That's all there is to it. And you see it in little children. When they're little, they want to bang things on you. They don't even know that it's good or bad. They're not aware of you at all.
Speaking of killing, and I don't think I need to say that was easy for you, because I think, wasn't it self-evident to anybody who's listening? Yeah, I'm getting a high sign from everybody. Anyway, I've been reading about Alexander Hamilton, a story, biography, from which the Broadway musical is supposedly based, called Hamilton. I haven't seen that. But I've just come to the end of his life, where he's had a duel, if you remember from your high school history, American history class, with a fellow by the name of Aaron Burr, who was vice president at the time in which he had the duel, by the way.
Hmm.
And people were astonished that he showed up, and he was like, he was okay with it. But Hamilton had determined to not take that first shot. It's part of sometimes the deal, you shoot purposely away. But Burr, he'd been taking lessons, and he shot him and killed him. But he had 40 hours, roughly, before he actually passed away and took him to a place. But I was struck by, you know, he did this to save his honor, you know, that they had this thing about honor and insult. And the fact that a human being could make that more important than his wife and seven children who needed him. I mean, what does that say about a value system and a culture that has that value system? But a lot of cultures have had it.
And still do. And still do. You know, losing face, you know, that's honor. There's something about that, you know. And I think it's I may say that it's misguided, but what I can, easy for me to say.
Right. Well, but it's an interesting value, and I'd like to just pause for a second and kind of look at where does it emerge from. Well, we know fundamentally, at least Rochelle and I have this perspective, that you're either in love or you're in fear, and when you're in love, you're coming from your authentic self, and when you're in fear, that's your ego self, that's the made-up self, that is eats on fear, that's what it, that's its diet, and so it's like made of it. And this ego is, since it's fear-based and it's always insecure about who it is, well, then it creates a persona, like I am the great politician or warrior or whatever, and I get my value through that character that I play. That's what I think happens in an honor-value society.
Pride is part of that.
Hubris.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good word to look at now as we look at so many people who are acting in ways where they don't seem to be truly sensitized to, like, the changes that are happening on the globe and in our environment, which really should be attended to by those in charge.
Easy for us to say. It's not so easy to make a change about that.
Well, it's so curious what's happening to the United States right now in 2017. We have this unusual character who is our president, if I may describe him that way. And it's like our ignorance has personalized.
Tweety Bird. I just came up with that. I just thought a man who tweets all the time is a Tweety Bird.
Remember what Tweety Bird would say? I talk, tweeted.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we hear all the time. But I thought I saw a booty cat. And the Democrats are booty cats, and the ISIS are booty cats, and all the bad people are booty cats except me, because I'm a good person.
I'm a good Tweety Bird.
I'm a good Tweety Bird.
But it seems to me our collective ignorance has personalized itself into a, you could argue, even if you, you know, given him the benefit of the doubt, that he's kind of ignorant in terms of so much that's happening historically, and suppose he doesn't read. But he kind of, that's kind of who America has become. We're like caught up in this gadget and technology and having a good time and drinking, and of course those who are stressed to survival. But we don't seem to cultivate much of the, shall we say, spiritual nature, the nature of that strives for goodness, truth, and beauty. Let's just call it that.
And oneness. Our spirituality boiled into religion is constantly plotting one thing against another. Is constantly creating separation.
That seems to me that that's the major thing that we need to realize right now. That, you know, who's the enemy? It's not the Islams or the Republicans or the Democrats or the other sex or anybody else. Let's face it, fear is the enemy of love.
Sweet as mother song in the still of the night, oh my love. knows it all. I'm here and I'm planning to stay. So don't let fear drive your love away. Sweet as a mother song in the still.
Fear is the enemy of love. Thank you, Francis Black. Oh, sorry, Senator. I know you can't. I'm sorry. Come on. What do you get to say? Well, I want to reiterate that notion, and it has been said that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Well, I would see that. I would say to that person who says that that's easy for you to say, but fear itself. Now, that's something hard to get a hold of. And I'm not so sure that we have to fear. Fear itself is the only thing left to fear. My suspicion is that there's nothing to fear. That doesn't mean we can't get afraid and won't get afraid. And when you got something coming at you that you know is going to hurt, well, the fear is, but it's designed to get you out of the way. But when you make it a constant in their life, and it's called worry or anxiety, and it can flip over to anger very quickly, that fear. But it's a good thing to get a hold of that emotion, and the more we do that, the quicker we're not going to have those, what you call them, immature wars. And that'd be good. It's fairly easy for me to say, given who I am and what I know.
Senator Beauregard, wouldn't you say that when Errol was talking about the ego, that I think that when we think that the ego is at stake or is threatened, in the way the corporeal self is threatened, you know, which we want to fight or flee, but when the ego is threatened, we have the same reaction because we think we are who we think we are, which is the ego. So it's constantly all our images of ourselves is what's threatened most of the time. And if we create a good image, I mean a solid image, whether it's good or bad, it's immaterial, but it's our self that is being threatened. And that's where this honor stuff comes in and the pride comes in and the belligerence comes in because we have to protect this ego.
Easy for you to say.
Wasn't that easy for me to say, actually?
Let me give you a suggestion here. One of the things that I've become more and more aware of is this I am sense of who I am that exists in, naked, without any images. And I encourage you to step aside from your normal routine, even if it's for like 2 or 3 seconds, just kind of sense this I am that isn't the person that's caught up in all of human activities and dramas, and see what you might find, and come back next week. We'll talk about it because we're going to be back. We are back every week. This is Insight Out, the Naked Truth. I'd like to give you my email because I'd so love to hear from you. And let me bring on my email giving voice, estrider@gmail.com.
I know that wasn't easy to say.
No. I had many voices. Okay, but I picked the one you heard. And our website is The Laughing Heart. Come on, what's not to like? The Laughing Heart. Go there. We got videos. We've got of us doing our theater. You'll see a younger Rochelle.
And a younger Errol. Very easy to say.
It has become less easy to do, I noticed, as I got older. But fortunately, the saying hasn't stopped too much. Others may not agree that that's fortunate. They may think that it's unfortunate. But tonight we've picked the phrase, easy for you to say. And we'd like to just close with saying things that are easy for us to say, like, if you were here right now and you were open to it, I'd give you a big hug. That'd be easy. That was easy to say. If you were here right now, and I got to see the light in your eyes, I would probably have a snapshot of your soul. Yep, that would be one of two things right off the top of my head that were easy, not only easy to say, but easy to imagine. So with that, our time together is drawing to a close. So Rochelle, what do we need to remember?
We need to remember that resistance is what we add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Easy for you to say.